Hey, you, wake up. It's Saturday morning, and it's time to jump on that to-do list. But that home improvement project doesn't have to be a chore. Before you tune in here to About Your House to listen and learn from the most experienced and reputable contractors in the service provider industry. On today's show, we have Al Harrell, retired, certified kitchen designer, and certified remodeler. About Your House is brought to you by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting students to tools of the trades and raising awareness of the many career pathways. Also brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed general contractor in North and South Carolina, from the hills to the coast. If you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
Morning. It's summertime. 94 degrees to the, supposed to be the high today. We're going to talk about the heat, talk about ways to beat the heat, establish more comfort in that house you got. And, you know, like every summer, we're going to review all the things you need to know about that air conditioning. And you might listen up because we're going to throw some facts at you that you need to know. Now, a lot of you that's been listening to the show for years, this is nothing but a repeat of things that I've said in the past. But at least I'll plug you back in and remind you. My guest today, Al Harrell. You know, it's been a long time since me and Al Harrell have talked. Good morning, Al.
I'd say it's a dozen years or more.
Dozen? Try about 20, Al.
Well, okay.
It's been a long time. For example, Al and I go back. I think you were one of the founding members of NARI.
Yes.
As I recall.
We met at the little restaurant at the park and South Boulevard and Woodlawn, I think, yeah.
Well, that's where some of the meetings were, but we started really out at Raintree.
Yeah, right.
And we started at Raintree, and you were one of the founding members. And so that goes back to 1990,
yeah.
October of 1990. I met Al really as a result of being in NKBA.
Yeah.
We met NKBA, I think, first, because you were really involved with that. You were
right.
CKD, right?
Right.
Certified Kitchen Designer.
Right.
And then we started the NARI chapter. You got on board with that and were involved with that. And he also was one of the first in the first study group of the certified remodeling group, which I was a member of. And also, and we met at your showroom over on American Kitchens.
Okay.
And if for the old people in Charlotte, older, you might say, American Kitchens was his remodeling firm. I call it a remodeling firm, but he remodeled.
Well, it was a kitchen and bath remodeling, yes.
And I've got to ask, I'm a little bit apprehensive to ask, because as we get older, I want to know about your wife.
She's doing fine.
Awesome. Good to hear, because you never know the answer to that.
We both experienced a little bit of cancer, but we've gotten through that. So
awesome. Glad to hear it. I remember you lived at the corner of Kirkpatrick and I can't remember.
Ashmead.
Ashmead?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I remember that. Where are you living now?
We've moved down. We've moved once since then. And then again, we moved down to Black Horse Run in South Carolina.
I got you.
It's I got away from HOAs. well, no, I'm still in an HOA, but it's a little bit more
laxed HOA.
They allow you to pull a trailer in a driveway.
I got you. Yeah, HOAs can be a pain. There's no doubt about it. And they vary from place to place, that's for sure. HOAs. Boy, we could talk 3 hours with people about HOAs.
Yeah, that's I lived one place for 7 years and thought everything was fine, and then they started fining me for the littlest thing I would do, and so
yep.
had to move out of there.
So the HOAs drove you out.
Yeah, you might say that.
Well, I can understand it because
to have my lifestyle, I carry things in trailers. I don't have a pickup truck, so I would always have a trailer.
You always had a trailer.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're just more convenient for me. And they would let me even back a trailer in the driveway to unload it. They didn't want a trailer in any driveway.
Well, let me ask you this. You just brought up something. When'd you get out of American Kitchens?
In January of 2018, I closed the door.
2018? It was that long?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
So you worked up until 2018?
Yeah, about 38 years.
Wow. And what caused you to shut it down? Just because you're getting older or what?
Well, no, after 2008, 2009, I just, things were slowing down a little bit. And I wasn't keeping up with the social media and all the various ways to plug your business. And so.
And that's a chore in itself.
Yeah.
That's
a
whole different side. Yeah. You know, you and I can relate to that very well. How old are you now?
I'm 81.
You're 81?
Yes.
I'll be damned.
Yes.
You're doing good.
I've survived that long.
81.
You know, I'm proud of the fact I've never spent a night in the hospital, so I'm still good.
You ought to be proud. You and me both, brother. That's great. I didn't realize you were 81. You got about 9 years on me.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Doing great. Okay. What have you been doing since you shut the business down? I bet you ain't stopped.
Well, I did two or three kitchens for neighbors and such, and I built a shop next to my house. At Black Horse Run, we have 1.25 acres, so we have room to do something.
Right.
As long as we can get around the building codes.
I hear you.
And right now they're working on Marvin and 521 to improve that intersection because traffic is a lot in Indian Land down there.
Traffic is a lot everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's gotten so bad.
Yeah. Just got to be patient. What can you say?
Yesterday was a true test of my patience.
Yes.
As I went up to Lake Norman, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But it's no different there than going down to Black Horse Run, I'm sure.
When we moved here in 78, we considered moving in Lake Norman, but decided to go south and get better schools at that time.
Well,
so
so you're still active and doing stuff?
Yes, yes. I don't do it for quite as long.
Oh, I understand. I get it. I do. Somebody asked me yesterday. I went and looked at a vent hood. See, I'm still putting vent hoods in. And gentleman asked me. He says, "What do you? What all do you do?" I says, "What I want to do, when I want to do it, the way I want to do it." And he says, "I kind of gathered that the first time I." First two, three paragraphs we talked, and because let's face it, we're not getting any younger, but I love working.
Oh.
Best days I have is when I go out and do something.
I intended to do more traveling, but would you believe over the years since 1980 I've been in business, I feel like I've traveled more when I was working than when I'm not working. It's strange. It's,
right.
Because you can take off on a weekend and you could really go a fair distance and see different things and that sort of thing, you know, and so you could do a lot in a short time and enjoy the beautiful country we have.
We have an absolutely gorgeous country. I started traveling, Al, you know, as a remodeler, we work all the darn time. Seems like we feel like the pressure to work and, you know, get it done. But when 2019 hit, I had an opportunity to go cross country and to San Francisco for 30 days, and it literally has changed my life. And it's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Did you drive out there?
I drove every mile between here and San Fran, the southern route. It was absolutely a beautiful experience, probably the greatest experience I've ever had, is seeing this country in ways that I never dreamed I would get to do.
Yeah, we've driven out to Yellowstone, and we've been out to...
I went there,
California. We flew out there and rented a Harley and drove 700 miles up the...
Up the
Big
coast.
Sur, yeah, coast.
Yeah, we drove down, one of those little trips I made was coming down the coast of Oregon.
Yeah.
That is absolutely a breathtaking trip.
Yeah, it's beautiful country. Yes.
You know, again, I highly encourage anyone. And it's not expensive if you plan it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reasonable. So you and your wife rented a Harley.
Yes.
And drove up the coast.
Yes.
That's awesome.
We've ridden Harleys for over 100,000 miles and driven Corvettes, and I like to drive.
Oh, I do too. I told Mary when we left here, and I said, I'm going to drive. She says, well, I don't mind driving. I says, but I want to say I drove cross country. So I drove every mile.
Yeah, yeah.
All 3,000 of them.
Now we drive down to Texas, Dallas, a fair amount because our daughter's there, but... and they're doing well down there, but it gives us a place to go. No.
Gotcha. You were an engineer, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm still an engineer.
Well, I know that, but that was your first...
Yes. I'm from St. Louis and went to school in Missouri School of Mines and Metallurgy. And now it's the Missouri School of Science and Technology. The Rolla campus is about 90 miles south of the main Columbia campus of Missouri, and they were always trying to name that to give it the recognition. So I think they've finally done it. So School of Science and Technology is fair.
Yeah, I remember Al, and I'm going to tell him some things here he probably didn't know or understand. Back then, he was a pain in the butt. Al was the kind of guy you wanted to have on your board, but he was an engineer mindset. And he would approach things different on a different wavelength than most of us in the room. And I always knew Al was going to cause a little bit of headache tonight. But that's okay. That's okay, because I've been on many, many boards since those days. And you need that. You need that mix to create a better board.
I'm an independent thinker, and I don't always follow the crowd.
No, you never did.
No.
And that's okay, because I'm not one to follow the crowd either, especially this day and time. Matter of fact, I don't like all the rules.
Yeah.
The rules get in our way, don't they, Al?
Yes, you got to be aware of them, definitely.
Oh, no, you got to be totally aware, but the rules definitely get in the way. More so today than ever before, because... Yeah. If the rules, that's fine, but even playing by the rules becomes a little difficult sometimes, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It adds a little more time and expense and everything, but I would say 70% of them are good for the safety.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some of them don't make a bit of dang sense.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that get in our way.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll bob and weave. And, you know, when you've been in the industry, how long were you in the industry? 38?
Well, I started in 1980 professionally.
What pulled you into the kitchen and bath business
I needed a job.
You needed a job?
I moved down here. I've moved about 15 times, but with the service and everything. But moved down here with Ingersoll Rand. And
what'd you do for them?
I was a sales engineer, accountant. Account manager. I sold large air compressors.
Gotcha.
Probably they'd fill up a room anywhere from 200 horsepower to 5,000 horsepower. And
you talking about air compressors?
Air compressors
that forced air into a hospital or whatever. I mean,
well,
I'm just curious.
What I did here was call on about six headquarters: Milliken, Burlington, and Cone
Textiles.
Textiles, because in that age, the looms were, which were shuttle looms, mechanical shuttle looms.
Okay.
Noisy. They'd have several hundred, 500 in one place, and you couldn't hear yourself think. They were converting those to air jet looms. Instead of the shuttle going between the yarn, they would have little air jets that would just feed the yarn across there.
Shoot the line across.
They would shoot the line across.
With air.
And it could go 200 or 300 times and be quiet. And so that's what was coming on. And these plants knew nothing about air. They're buying their looms from overseas. And we were providing the air. And it was very interesting. We'd try and provide a couple of air compressors for durability and everything. And
Ingersoll Rand was a big air compressor.
Yeah.
Still
oh,
is
yeah.
today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big company.
So, and air is like a utility, water or electric or whatever. Plants need it. And so it was very interesting. We got around a lot, but then we had a little bit of a parting of the ways. And so in August 1980, I left them, and there wasn't a whole lot of engineering jobs around. So I saw an ad in the paper, said reface two kitchens a week, and you can make, you know, $50,000. And I said, that's what I want to do. And so I started doing it. I started refacing kitchens in 1980.
1980. Did you name it American Kitchens then?
I did. I saw, I think on Tryon or something, I saw American Cleaners. And I said, American, that's a good patriotic
cool.
name.
All right, that's cool. What a segue.
Yes.
Great segue into the show today. And let me tell you once again, we're going to talk about kitchens. We're going to talk about kitchens. And you know, with YouTube University being what it is, anybody can go online and get educated about kitchen layouts, kitchen dimensions, kitchen cabinets, kitchen. We're going to talk more in depth about it today, probably more than I have in quite a few years, but also going to talk about the heat. So go get you a cup of coffee. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and talk to Al Harold. And I'd call him retired, but he ain't really retired. It's just not in his nature. So come on back. We'll talk to more
about it. Just not making money.
Hey, we can always make more money, Al. You know that. 704-227-8986. You got a call. We're here. Facebook Live, Fox Sports Charlotte. Download the free app. Stream us live. By far the best way to hear it. 94.7 FM has gone away, folks. We're on the internet now. So tune in. We'll be back with more about your house.
Shining through the window lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
All right, welcome back, folks. It's summertime outside. 94 degrees is the high today. 94 degrees and sultry. It's good old Charlotte summertime heat. It sucks. I'm not fond of it. So anyway, we're going to talk about that a little bit. And after I cut my phone off, make it silent if I can. At any rate, heat. I'm looking for the humidity today. It takes a while to find it on this here. Well, I know it's above 50%. We'll find out here in a minute here. Hold on a second. Yep, 59% right now. That's mugging. It's only going to get worse during the day. So probably up in the mid-70s is what the humidity is going to be. I'm looking for the dew point. It doesn't show it right now. At any rate, it's hot outside, folks. And your attic right now, today, at 94 degrees, your attic temps are going to be right at between 125 and 150. And if you don't have an attic tent around your disappearing stairways, you ever put an attic tent in now?
No, I haven't.
So an attic tent, people, I've talked about them for years. I'm going to just throw this one out there early on in the show here. If you've got a disappearing stairway in your house, a fold-up. If you've got a folding disappearing stair in your house, in the building envelope of your house, and you don't have an attic tent or something like it to literally separate the area, the airspace in your attic from the airspace in your house, it's a zippered covering. You fold your stairs down, you go climb your ladder, you unzip the flap, you go up in your attic, you do your business, you come back downstairs, you zip the flap shut, and it creates an air barrier between your attic and your living area. Because every time you cut your air conditioner comes on, you're creating a negative pressure, and you're going to pull air from your attic. And typically, if you go in your hallway or typically, like I say, if you go in your hallway, if that's where your disappearing stairway is, you're going to notice your air return. The big old grill where the air return goes into the system to be coming out your ductwork, you know, your heat registers or your air registers in each room. Well, it's sucking air right out of your attic. That 120, 150 degree air in your attic is being pulled down into the air return, and you're literally spending your money energizing and cooling that air in your air return from the attic. Now, why would you overwork, and you're just creating more draw on your power, on your energy, and less cool coming into your house? So, attic tents. They work. You can go to attictent.com. You can go to our YouTube channel, About Your House Radio, or Ray Terry. Our YouTube channel, I've got a 5 or 10 minute video on how to install a attic tent. It's simple. If you've got a staple gun and a caulking gun, that's all you need. And if push come to shove, you can at least get it up with a staple gun, come back later and caulk it and seal it. And it's very, very easy to do. I would highly recommend it. You save energy and become more comfortable. And also, later on in the show, I'm going to bring it up again in the second or third hour, and we're going to go with some techniques and some methodologies on how. I got an engineer here with me today, and he can, you know, he's been around a while. You were in the industry how long, 38 years?
Well, I've been doing these, professionally.
Yeah, professionally, pushing 40 years. I've got 54 years in it, and, I've seen quite a bit of issues with our heating and cooling. And now we're here in the dead dog days of summer. And by the way, this is the largest vacation week, the most attended vacation week of the year. This week coming up between July 4th week is the largest vacation week of the whole year. And if you want, I said some things last week, about what do you need to do when you go on vacation. You're going to leave your house. You're going to lock the front door, and you're going to walk out for 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. What do you need to do? What do you need to do to prep that house for vacation? One, you don't turn your air conditioner off. You cut it down low. No, excuse me, you cut it up. Excuse me, reverse psychology here. You're going to raise the temperature to about 78, 79 degrees, and you're going to leave it there. You don't want to cut it off. But there are certain things you might want to consider cutting off. Because I got two calls this week on the comments I made last week. One, if you've got an electric water heater, I would cut it off. But when you cut it off, you also need to cut the water off feeding it. Why? Because your top element, a lot of water heaters have top heating elements if they're electric. And if you leave it on, if you cut the water off and you cut the water heater off, what's going to happen is you're going to fry that top element, because over a period of a week or two, that water is going to rescind, the level is going to go down and fry that top element. Now you say, why would I do all that? Why don't I leave the hot water, the water heater on? Well, you can. You're just going to soak up energy. You're going to keep that water hot for 2 weeks when you don't need to. Or you can cut the thermostat down on your water heater. And that's that little knob on the bottom. And if you don't know about it, that's something every homeowner should know about. What's your thoughts on that, Al? Agree or disagree?
I think it all sounds good, but if you don't do anything, it probably won't cost you more than 10 bucks.
Right. Well, you're right. But what I would, what I recommend people to do now is I'd cut the water off to the house.
Yeah. And if you have pets, be careful how high you set the thermostat.
Well, you're probably not going to leave pets in the house for 2 weeks anyway, a week or two.
Well,
I would guess. Maybe, maybe not, unless you got somebody come in and check on them and feed them. But, yeah, if you've got pets, that changes the parameters a little bit.
Uh-huh.
It does. But the reason I say this is because how, when washer hoses break, when risers break, risers are the little 3/8-inch plumbing water lines that feed your commodes, your water closets, and or other fixtures and sinks in your house, they tend to break when you're not in the house. Why is that? How does it know? But and then you come home and water's coming out your front door. Then you've got a catastrophe dealing with that. All I'm saying is think about these things. But it's amazing how washer hoses break and bust when you're on vacation.
Yeah.
How many times does that happen? And it, how does it know you're on vacation? But it seems to happen when you're not home. That's all I'm saying.
That happened to us when I was in school in Rolla, Missouri. Four of us were living in a little house, and we came back from vacation, and water was running, and we got a heck of a gas bill. And we said, well, the water heater must have been running the whole time. And so we got looking at this and saying, that's still a heck of a gas bill. But what it turned out to be, it was just a cold winter. Being engineers, we started calculating how much gas that would use to heat that much water that was going through. And it wasn't that much. So we just figured out that we had a cold winter. And we all notice it when the gas bills go up in the wintertime.
Right.
But so some things, you know, aren't all that bad as far as usage.
Right.
That way.
Well, another thing you might want to think about is cutting your gas off. Every homeowner needs to know how to cut gas off to his house. That's something I've harped for many, many years. How do you cut the gas off? Well, every gas meter's got a valve feeding that gas meter. And if you learn, you need a pair of channel locks or a big pair of adjustable wrench to turn that valve and cut it off. Now, now you say, why? Well, that house that blew up in Ballantyne, what, last year, year before last? I mean, just literally blew up. That happened when they were out of the house on vacation or left to go out of town. And when that happened, and because when they, I think when they returned home, they did something and it triggered it. We had an explosion.
No.
At any rate, gas lines, and I went under a house one day when someone was on vacation, and the gas was literally leaking in the crawl space. It had been doing that for years, but I found it. I smelled it, actually, and followed it and found it. But gas, as we all know, highly explosive, highly volatile, and something you might want to think about turning off. Now, if you do that, when you return, you got to consider lighting all your pilot lights that you need to light. Most new equipment, such as furnaces, on-demand water heaters, everything but your gas fireplace, has electronic ignition on it, and meaning they'll light automatically, you know, but you would have to relight your pilots. A lot of people want to argue with what I just said, and that's fine. You don't have to do any of it. It's just I'm throwing it out there, something to think about, because you are leaving your house for a couple weeks. So, you know, whatever might happen, you just may want to consider it, you know, because I'm going to tell you something. There's nothing worse than a fire and or a water issue, a catastrophe water break. Those things are really devastating and very, very, very stressful.
Probably a couple of the easiest things to do is to turn your valves off for your washer and dryer.
Yep.
Washer, excuse me.
Thank you, sir.
And you got the hot and cold water.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are vulnerable and cost nothing. Turn them off. And then turn your temperature up 2 or 3 degrees, and it will save you some energy. Other than that,
I'm just after save the catastrophes.
Yes.
You know, and the insurance claims, because I'm going to tell you, in this day and time, it's never been harder to get something done. Never. And, you know, we talk about it every week here on the show about, well, how stupid has become a serious disease in the construction industry. Are you out there playing with anybody, any remodelers or anything these days?
Not really. I've done a lot around my house, and I've always done remodeling. When I was in high school, I remodeled houses and so on. So, the first new house we bought, I redid the whole basement.
Right.
And before that, I was always building something.
Right. Just your nature. Well, you've always been a kind of DIY kind of guy, meaning you did a lot of it yourself when you were in the business.
Well, I grew up literally living next to a garage that was attached to our house in St. Louis. And when I was 2 years old, I got a picture of myself underneath a car and or on top of a tow truck. And so my dad had three wreckers running AAA service, and
so you were around automobiles your whole life.
6 years old, I was pumping gas, and so
sounds familiar.
Yeah, we had you adjusted brakes. They were mechanical brakes.
Yep,
back then, and not hydraulic, and so needed different equipment to adjust those. So I remember when power steering came out. And people were running off the road because they just oversteering. And so it took a while for people to adjust to these new things. Yeah.
Yeah, still we're adjusting to new things today.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, the computer and the infrastructure behind business. When we came up, we didn't have all this mess, did we?
No, and I don't think I'm adjusting to a whole lot anymore. I'm happy with computers and everything, but I don't do much on Facebook and all the other stuff.
You just joined Facebook, didn't
okay.
you? Didn't you?
Well,
did you not? I just got a friend. You know, you came up, and I just put a friend request out to you. Okay. You know, I don't know. You might have been hacked.
Okay.
Social media today, you never know what's happening, who's hacking you, who's really real or not. Frankly speaking, I don't like it. Social media kind of like is
hacking. That scares me as much as anything, because I've had several instances where somebody would get into my account, establish a new password, and steal your account.
Yep.
No.
I know. It sucks.
You got to be careful.
Yeah, you got to be too careful. And then I don't want to go into the technology rant again. Technology's fantastic when it works. That's all I can say. When it works.
But overall, many, many things are very secure, like depositing checks by taking a picture of them.
I love it.
When I started that, they said that was the most secure way to do it. And so I've been doing it forever since. And
I do it now because someone one day says, you're not taking pictures, you go to the bank? I said, yeah, I go to the bank. Why you do that?
Yeah.
I said, you can take pictures and deposit them. And so I started that, and I got to admit, it's pretty darn handy.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
I like it. For the most part, I love technology. I just can't stand the corruption behind it all. That's it right there. But then again, that goes with about everything. I see that you wore your 101st Airborne hat in here. You're a Vietnam vet.
I am. ROTC was mandatory for 2 years at a state school in Missouri. And so after 2 years, whether it was patriotic or whatever reason, I decided to go for another 2 years. And kind of a funny story that I was wondering whether somebody was telling me not to. Because that time I was on co-op with Ford Motor in St. Louis, very great job there, and the Army said we had to enlist in the reserves, and we were going to get $27 a month, so we had to enlist so that if we dropped out of ROTC, they could pull us in. Well, I wasn't in school with the whole class enlisted, so I was in St. Louis working on co-op. And I had to go downtown, 12th and Olive, to the federal building to enlist. And I got down there, and it's a big building. People go there to enlist. But people don't go there to enlist as an ROTC student. And they didn't know anything about this program. And to cut the story short, after talking to about six different people, I found a WAC major that said, I can do that. All we have to do is find an American flag. So we found an American flag on the sixth floor, and I stood in front of it, and she swore me in. But while I was talking to these various people one after another, I had serious doubts whether I was supposed to be doing this. But I when I start something, I tend to follow through. So I did, and I enlisted. So anyway, from then, after school, I went in the Army and for 3 years and flew helicopters. And
so you were a warrant officer?
No, I went in as second lieutenant.
Oh, second lieutenant, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was curious because helicopter pilots can be.
Yeah, most of them are warrant officers.
That's
yes.
What I remember.
Yes. 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 Yes.
So you flew helicopters?
I flew.
Hueys?
Hueys. That was the.
So you went to Vietnam and flew Hueys?
In 1968, yes.
Wow. How was that?
Well, it was pretty much like they trained us for, but after you get in Vietnam, there's a whole lot more to be learned about flying. And we had some new guys come over. And I make a comparison. It's like giving a 16-year-old driver a job as a taxi cab driver in New York, and he's going to have a learning period. Well, in Vietnam, you have a learning period, I'll tell you, because you're
flying. But you better learn quick.
You're flying low level. You're flying anything that helicopter will do, and it'll do a whole lot more as you keep learning. And I was in an unfortunate situation. It was looked good on paper, but I was in a unit, the 101st Aviation, for 4 months. And thank goodness I learned to fly with these experienced pilots. And so I got a couple hundred hours, and I was supposed to have 300 hours before I was taking aircraft out on my own as aircraft commander. But instead, another battalion came over from Fort Carson, Colorado, doubled the number of aircraft our 2nd Battalion, it was, the 158th Battalion, fabulous battalion at this time. But the helicopters came over, all these men came over, and they were lucky to fly 10 hours in country before they started flying on missions. And that was unheard of. They didn't know how to get around. They could follow a map, but you don't follow a map when you're
tactical.
When you're tactical, putting troops in, taking them out. And so we had some problems. They didn't know where hospitals were and that sort of thing. And lost a few people. And then they started cutting down branches. They didn't know any difference. That Huey would cut down a 1-2-inch branch. And we went into some tight places, but you were supposed to be able to do that without harming the aircraft.
Right.
But our company was known to have rotor blades. We were giving rotor blades to every other unit to use as seats for theaters or walkways or fences or anything. So anyway, we finally kind of adapted ourselves, and most everybody survived. So I was very thankful that they learned quickly.
That's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that, too.
And
how long did you fly in Vietnam?
Well, I was there a year.
So you flew the whole time you were there?
Yeah.
That's like, what an experience.
I didn't fly as much as some others because as a captain or whatever, I was doing other things.
So you did make it to captain?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Got Al Harold in the house talking old school here. Al Harold, retired kitchen remodeler and many other things. Come back. We'll finish the discussion and talk kitchens, bathrooms, heat. Summertime, all that and more right here on About Your House. Come on back. We'll talk. Your house. Got Al Harold in the studio today talking about, well, as always on About Your House here, we talk to our guests about their life, what brought them here and why, and all the whereas and where to's. And Al was sharing his experience in Vietnam as a Huey pilot, which I'm glad you were there and not me. So there you go.
Yes.
And I appreciate your service. I really do. I was a Huey pilot. That's exciting, though.
Well, it is.
That's some experience you'll never, ever have.
Flying's exciting. It's fun. You just don't think about what you're doing. You just go ahead and do it. But the bottom line is that if you learn and fly, do all the things they tell you, we didn't lose too many. We really didn't. About in the year, we lost about 13, I guess.
Right.
And and you don't want to lose them, but not too bad. And some of it was hostile fire. Some was running into things or crashing. But I've seen many aircraft crash and people walk away from it. So the helicopter does pretty good.
Yeah, the Bell Huey was an extraordinary, to this very day, still is, one of the most utilitarian vehicles ever produced in the military.
Definitely. And a lot of them still flying. And now the Black Hawk is that much better, really. But it doesn't take anything away from the Huey. The Black Hawk's just a newer version.
Newer, advanced version. Yeah, no question about it. Well, like I said, appreciate what you did and your service. And I'm glad you made it back home.
Yes.
A lot didn't, you know. And back to your kitchen. When you started your American Kitchens, did you get involved immediately with the NKBA? Because you were involved. You were one of the
pretty,
few.
Yes, pretty quickly.
You remember Faye Hodges?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Is she still around?
She's still doing. She's in her 80s now and still. I talked to Faye about a month or so back and still perking right along.
Very good.
Doing her thing, painting. Being artist and doing her thing. But, yeah. But, all right, she was a friend of mine, and I can't remember how me and Faye met, but she was one of the early people in my career with that was really involved with the NKBA, the National Kitchen and Bath Association. You started in 80. I started my business in 1973, which makes it 54 years, basically. But I got into construction right out of high school, and I wanted to be the best I could be. And I've talked about this many times on the show here. So I looked out to the Charlotte area on professionals in the industry that I could learn from. And this NKBA was absolutely incredible on what they offered for education. What took you there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started a kitchen business, and shortly thereafter I found a little showroom on Monroe Road, and then in 83 I got the women's show, and when I moved out of the women's show I moved that into a showroom on McElway.
Right.
And so somewhere between there, summer of 83 or something, when I had a showroom, because you were actually required to have a decent showroom to be a member of
NKBA. Right.
And so it's a little more lax, I believe, now.
It is. It was when I joined, because I did join the NKBA.
Yeah. But they did have some requirements, and since then, and then shortly after that, I became a certified kitchen designer. And then in Nary, we became certified designers. And so there's all kinds of credentials you can get. And
well, that's what I talk about on the show here. Like NARI, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, they had a meeting last week that I tout NARI a great deal because Al knows that he's one of the charter members, and so am I. I was the original chapter president. He was on the board, I believe, for some time. And we both were very active in NARI, actually.
Yes.
Very active.
Yeah.
We, Dave Tyson, Doug Marsh, myself, you, I can't remember everybody that was in that first study group, but we met at your showroom over on McElway every Wednesday evening, and we'd sit down and have a study group around the certified remodeling procedures, you might say. And we all passed the exam, every one of us that went to that first study group. We became certified remodelers, CRs. And now they've got many, many more certifications around the NARI education program. As in the NKBA, you went to a meeting, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yes, yes. I, Just saw it on the internet and decided I'd go see if anybody was there I knew.
Yeah, somebody texted me the next day, says, I saw somebody named Harold talk to you. And I said, Harold? Who is Harold? Then she texted me back. She said, it's Al. And what's amazing, Al, is I thought about you a week before that.
Okay.
And I said, where did Al go? What's happened to Al? And Lord of mercy, you show up. And so I invited him on the show here to talk and share some stuff. And how many kitchens do you think you've designed through the years?
Oh, about 2,500.
Quite a few, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, kitchens and bathrooms, other jobs. But we numbered each one, and it got up about 2,500.
You were a kitchen cabinet dealer as well.
Yes, yes.
How many lines of cabinets did you carry at one time? Can you remember?
At one time, we normally had about three or four, and I gave up a couple of them. So, you know.
We all did.
but as you get more experience and a better showroom, you're offered better cabinets. And I had some of the best cabinet lines.
What was your best line? If I recall, I think I know what it was.
Wood mode was one
that I
didn't respect too much in the beginning, but then they kind of came around and improved themselves, and I was proud to have wood mode, and Plain and Fancy was a good family-owned company. Altercraft is still a fine company in Liberty, North Carolina here.
I was an Altercraft dealer myself.
That was one of the better ones.
Except I wouldn't. The MCP wrap. No, it's done. I would never, ever, between you and me, we were sold a bill of goods with MCP, weren't we, as being a good product. It's not a good product, never has been, never will be. That's Ray Terry talking. That's my own personal experience, and I'll tell you why. Because when you go back to one of your kitchens, the day we left was absolutely beautiful, and you go back 15 years later, and you see that same kitchen, water plays havoc on MCP. The slightest bit of water plays havoc on MCP. MCP, what is MCP? It's melamine-coated board, right?
Okay.
It's the particle board that's covered with a surface, a laminated surface. Mm-hmm. That's MCP. And certain cabinet brands, not mentioning any in particular, are made predominantly with MCP. And I won't ever go with anything but plywood again.
Just because of water?
Water.
Damage?
Water. I went back and saw it, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, you know. And there again, we always strive to be the best we can be, right? And in today's world, plywood cabinets reign. They rule. Because I go into a lot of kitchens now, even today, not a lot, but my fair share, and I see a lot of cabinets. And there again, I'm looking at different brands. I don't know what I'm looking at brand-wise. I just know that I'm in a kitchen and there sits a cabinet in front of me. And I can look at it and tell you, I was in a kitchen yesterday that was built 7 years ago. Well, predominantly MCP boxes. Why? Because they're inexpensive. They're cheaper. Plywood, you're going to pay 30 to 40% more for those cabinets than you do the cheaper cabinets. And I know cheap cabinets because I was a cheap cabinet dealer at one time. In this business world, you got to meet the demands of the market. And in some markets we went in and played with, they wanted cheap cabinets. They wanted new kitchens, but they couldn't afford the top of the line. So we found, remember Homecrest?
Oh, yeah. No.
What a pile of junk. And, you know, And I know because I used it many, many times. And today's world, I wouldn't go back there. Just wouldn't do it. Didn't you run across things like that?
Well, yeah, some of them, I can't remember the names, but some of them, you don't have to. Some pretty thin sides and that sort of thing. And so that's what I looked for more than anything was a structure. Now, the particle board... A good grade of particle board didn't bother me. But water will hurt anything. Water will hurt plywood also.
So. Oh, water does damage anything. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I agree. But there again, the only reason I bring it up is when you're looking in the DIY market is enormous today. Enormous. You got self-improved contractors, if you get my drift, you know, or try it wannabes. But anyway, we're going to take a top of hour break here. We're going to come back with hour number two. We'll talk a little kitchen design and things you might want to know at designing your kitchen. Like, what sizes do cabinets come in stock? Do you know? We'll talk a little bit about it. Right here on About Your House, I got Al Harold, a retired, not really, kitchen designer. We'll talk to him and talk kitchens, bathrooms, cabinetry when we get back with more About Your House.
You awake yet? Hour two. Al Harold, a retired certified kitchen designer and certified remodeler, continues his conversation with Ray about his journey in the industry, as well as what's to come. About Your House is brought to you by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting students to tools of the trades and raising awareness of the many career pathways. Also brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed general contractor in North and South Carolina, from the hills to the coast. If you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
Welcome back to hour number two of About Your House. I also want to thank all the support from my sponsors over the years because we couldn't have made it this far if we didn't have them. And I appreciate the support Put Tools in Schools is getting. It's something we need to work hard and heavy on for next school year. We're trudging ahead with that. We've got a new website. It was launched yesterday. However, it may not be online till 2 to 3 days. That's what they told us. That's PutToolsInSchools.org. And I've been waiting quite some time here, about 3 to 6 months, on this new website because we need a place with all the facts and all the resources that is needed for the program. Now, what is Put Tools in Schools? It's a nonprofit organization that we go to schools and have trade career days. I don't know if you're familiar with them, Al. We go to schools, high schools preferably, but we're going to go out into schools around the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area. There are 9 counties in District 6, Southwest District 6 of North Carolina. We're going to reach out to all the counties, find out what programs exist, what we as an industry can get do to help perpetuate and raise awareness of the career opportunities in the trades that most of the students are not even aware of. When I ventured into this program in 2018, it started as an awareness program, just to raise awareness to the possibilities of the career pathways in the trades, working with your hands, working with your mind, creativity, imagination, most of all, critical thinking. Because when you fix things, when you learn to work with your hands and your mind, you're creating. You're using your mind for critical thinking, the possibilities. These kids don't know what that is. Unfortunately, it's true, folks. I've talked to over 5,000 students since 2018 about the career pathways and opportunities that exist out there in the real world, everyday world, that will bring you purpose and, most of all, happiness. It's not for everyone, I agree, but Al sitting here, Al Harold, big engineer that he is, worked with his hands most of his life, right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And when are you happiest? Probably when you're working with your hands creating.
Yes.
And most people, that's the way God made it, okay? That's a God law. We are creators. We're artists. We're geniuses, each and every one of us, but we're not applying that in our education system, these kids. We need to show them a menu of opportunities that they don't know exist. That's what Put Tools in Schools is all about, is getting into the schools, embracing, engaging kids with activities that show them tools and a way to use their minds and their hands and produce and help and serve. That's something we need to do because it's not being done in our education system of today. I'm not criticizing the education. Well, yeah, I am too. It don't work. The kids aren't happy. And most of all, everything we want in life, we want to be happy. And there's a way you can get up every day, go out and serve and have purpose and have a happy life and make a lot of money. A lot. Right, Al?
Yes, definitely.
So learn to use your hands, your mind. Let's help our kids. PutToolsInSchools.org should be up here in the next 24, 48 hours. We need your help. We need your money. We need industry to step up, and let's get geared up for next year, getting in the high schools and the schools within the confines around Charlotte-Mecklenburg and other counties. So we need to do it for our kids, for our future. For our country's future, we need tradespeople. We need kids that are happy, purpose-filled, and productive. So I encourage you next week, possibly, go to PutToolsInSchools.org, see what you can do to help. We're out to help kids, help their future, help their families, and most of all, help our community grow. So there you go. That's PutToolsInSchools.org. That's what I'm doing now.
It's always handy to know how to use a tool.
Well, I talked to a gentleman the other day, you know, about I was on a job, and he says, Ray, who can I call? Who can I call? Who can I call? So I gave him a list of people, you know, and it's the people that I would recommend. And not all of them are large companies. Most of the companies I recommend are hands-on owners. You were always hands-on.
Yes.
Always.
Well.
I mean, you had a group of electricians, plumbers, and infrastructure people you used, but you also did a lot of it yourself.
I had all my own installers and trained them all.
Right, exactly. Yep. And that's the best way to do it, training programs. And another thing about PutToolsInSchools.org, it's got a resource tab. In that resource tab, there's a PDF document you can download, and it's got resources as to date that we have. That's going to grow. We need industry to get involved, get online, and put their name in the hat. Having a training, apprenticeship program, some sort of training program to teach these kids in your company with your particular trade and your avenue of approach, you might say. Because not all companies have certified, approved apprenticeship programs, but they've got programs that train, educate, and you get paid in the process. Not a bad gig. Something to think about. PutToesInSchools.org. All right. Talking here with Al Harold about, well, his life, actually, what he did, what he's still doing. And Kay.
Yes.
That's your wife's name.
She is fine. We just celebrated 59 years.
So well, congratulations. I just remembered her name.
Yes.
That's why I said it. Okay. It just came to my mind, and it just out of the blue. Just out of blue, out of the blue, out of the hat. I said, Kay, that's your wife's
that's
name.
That's right.
I remember her well. Short little lady.
Yes.
I remember.
Always been short.
Yep, yep. And been. She was a part of American Kitchens as well.
Oh, definitely. For about the first 4 years or so, she wasn't, 5 years. And then she got with the program and well, and then she quit about 5 years before I did.
Five. She said, I've had so. It. I'm ready to walk. You know, so, I remember you also as a Corian fabricator, one of the earlier ones. You and I both, we played in that realm of Corian for many, many years, actually.
I started that in 1983 and really enjoyed the product. It's a fabulous product. They really haven't changed the product. They've changed colors, added on some beautiful colors, and what we call movement, where it looks like a piece of marble and such. So we did other things, but Corian was still hard to beat.
I loved it as a solid surface.
When somebody came in the showroom, I would have them put a dish or a cup down on a piece of Corian and a piece of granite. And you had to be careful putting stuff on granite. I mean, it's not bad. We have some granite in our house, but we have mostly Corian. And
you still believe in Corian?
Oh yes, definitely.
Well, you don't see much of it. I've seen more of it taken out than I ever put in, and they're putting new stone in, new quartz and crystals, and all the man-made synthetics and. You know, the surface products in the kitchen and bath business have exploded. Have you been down to Cosentino and seen the new Decton?
Not lately, no.
Al, it's exploded.
No.
They've got tile, porcelain tile now.
Oh, yeah.
126, 126 inches, which is over 10 feet, obviously, and by 53. That's a big piece of tile.
Oh, yeah.
And you can get it almost an eighth inch thick. Now, that seems too fragile to handle to me. But anyway, that's the new.
Even the half inch material, 12 millimeter, is fragile.
I know.
I was talking to him how to install that. And you have to adhere that to a substrate.
Yep.
Before you even take it out of the shop. So it is fragile.
They had a workshop at a Cosentino 2 weeks ago, an installation. They had two in the past 6 months of installation met, and I try to stay abreast of that and announce that on the show here because the surface and tile industry has literally exploded, but you don't have the technicians or installation knowledge out there to handle these new products the way they're supposed to be handled and installed. So it's one of the reasons that I tout the industry networking with NARI and, you know, NKBA and all the others, because these associations have great educational benefits that you can attend as free, like the Cosentino workshop. Didn't cost a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you could go out there and learn installation methods for these new products. And they're great products. They're phenomenal products. But, my gosh, what tile has done over the past 10 years has been incredible.
One advantage of Corian is that it actually fuses together. When we fabricate that, you cement two pieces together, but it actually gets hot and heats
epoxy,
and fuses together. And granite, none of the other surfaces do that. They glue them together. But that's not quite the same.
I agree.
I got a piece of granite on my deck. Now, it's I don't think there's any harm with it being outside. But they actually fuse two pieces together to make the thickness. And now I'm noticing some of those are coming apart because that
cracking.
Cement is not, it's just the cement's coming loose. And I didn't realize that would happen. But,
right. Yeah, but I see it all the time in kitchens when I go in there to do a new hood or whatever, that these seams sometimes break loose.
Now, what we've done in the last couple of kitchens is put granite next to our range on either side, but put corian around the sink.
Right.
Because corian is virtually seamless. When it's seamed together, you don't know there's a seam there.
I agree with that 100%.
And so it's very durable that way.
Remember the days when Fountainhead and others came on the market?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they had no idea what they were getting into.
Do you remember a product called Nouvelle?
Yeah, I do. Remember the word?
That came out, and it was a little over an eighth of an inch thick. And we tried it for countertops, and you needed a substrate. That's a board underneath to support it. And then you'd glue the pieces together, and it would look good. But heat was the downfall.
Right.
If anything got too hot, it would actually bubble up. And not too long ago, in my house, I have one bathroom that has a fiberglass shower. And it's in good shape. It's 20 years old, but it looks like new because it's not used too much. So I thought I'd have one of these companies that do a shower in a day come out and look at it. And then when they showed me their product, I said, I know what that is. In my desk drawer, I had a couple pieces of Nouvelle. They're using Nouvelle for that type of product. And it's a good product for the application.
Right. Good sheet goods.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there's some great products out there, but look, how many times have we seen products that came on the market that we looked at and says, oh, no, it's not going to make it. Not going to make it, you know. And they said, why would you say that? Because it don't make sense. Like that floating ceramic tile floor they had. And they test marketed it in Charlotte in the Lowe's stores. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget it when I said, it was advertised on TV.
Yeah.
I said, that ain't going to work. There's no way. I walked in a laundry room one day and saw it. And I said, how long old is this floor? They just finished it last week. I says, well, get ready. He says, for what? I says, we're going to crack a few. He says, what do you mean? I says, that stack washer and dryer will not move on this floor without cracking tiles because this tile is not fastened to the floor, and it's going to have some give, and it's going to crack tiles. I know it.
What was the tile made of? Was
it? It was a porcelain ceramic, or ceramic tile.
Okay.
But they said it would float. No! Never happened. It won't work. Anyway, I'll finish the story when we get back from the break. 704-227-8986. You're listening to Fox Sports Charlotte. Download the free app. Stream us live. By far the best way to hear us. Go online, foxsportsradiocharlotte.com. I do believe you can find us on podcastradios.com. Facebook Live on About Your House radio page. There we are. How y'all doing? Okay, come on back. Got Al Harold in studio talking stuff around kitchens and bathrooms. Come on back. We'll be here.
Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, to Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland.
Welcome back. Before the break there, I was talking about this new tile they test marketed in Charlotte, ceramic or porcelain, whatever it was. But I went in a job one day, and I was telling Al during the break, it was right around from his house over on Ashmead. Never forget it. And I walked in. Matter of fact, I think it was on Kirkpatrick, the house. And I went in there, and he couldn't believe what I was telling him. I said, we're going to crack these tiles. He says, Well, why? And I says, because this is a stack unit, you know, front loaders, and it's heavy. And you've got points of pressure on each foot of these units, and we're talking about, what, probably 600-700 pounds here. He said, okay, you know, so I started moving it, and it says, the first one said, beep. And when I heard, and you've heard that sound, haven't you? It ain't a good sound. Whenever you hear the pink, you just heard a crack. And I said, there went one. He says, really? I said, yeah. Then I moved it again. He said, pink. There goes another one. And before it was over, I had cracked four tiles. And it had nothing to do with what I was doing because you, in a laundry room, you've got to be able to move a washer and a dryer. I mean, it's just a requirement. Wouldn't you think?
Yes, I would think so.
You know, washer and dryer. So anyway, that was another one of those test market things they have in certain areas of the country. Well, Charlotte got picked for that one. And I knew immediately when I saw it, it would never work. And it didn't hang around long either. It left about as quick as it hit. So for obvious reasons. But, you know, back to the Corian thing, that's something that you see nobody selling much anymore, Al.
Really?
Yeah, Corian is not something that I've seen marketed or sold in years, really. Now it's gone to all the man-made quartz, all the composites and man-made synthetics that have come on the market that are so-called superior, you know. And, hey, whatever.
I still like all of them, primarily granite. That has the natural movement and everything, I think is great. Now, I was surprised they're calling porcelain a natural product. Because porcelain's not a natural product.
Nope, it's not.
You know, it's a baked product.
It is, you're right.
And so they're stretching it to call that a natural product. That's made from natural mud that you bake. But
make porcelain tile very similar to ceramic tile, except it's done under a lot more pressure.
Yeah,
twice as much.
And it's a beautiful product. My daughter is a potter. She makes things out of porcelain and does a fabulous job with it. She loves it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She's a potter.
Yeah.
What do you call those guys? Pottery people.
Pottery people.
Yeah, I know a few of
those. She has taught herself and has quite a business going. And
that's what she's doing?
Quite original. Well, she's a realtor also. But,
okay.
Nice hobby. But she likes to work with porcelain rather than regular clay. And it's a little more expensive, but it has more clarity to it, and it's a harder product.
It's much harder.
Yeah.
I went. Did you ever go to that Crossville Tile thing they did? You went up there?
Oh, no.
Well, Crossville Tile used to have these seminars and workshops that they'd take you up to Crossville, Tennessee, and show you the plant, the manufacturing facility where they make porcelain tile. And man, that was interesting as heck. That 2 days they took us up there was like an unbelievable education in tile. And learned a lot. So that was that. And once again, you can attend educational seminars and workshops this way if you get involved with different associations, such as the NKBA, National Kitchen and Bath Association. Where was that meeting you went to? You remember?
The granite place, Easy Stone.
Okay. How many people were attending?
There were about 30, 35.
That's good.
Like
good
that.
Turnout.
Summertime, attendance drops off a little bit.
Yeah, well, you would have thought the other night at the Neary meeting, somebody called me. I had to attend an event Thursday night, another event I was invited to, the Equilibrium Awards over at the Reverdy convention place. Equilibrium Awards, WFAE gave out. I want to congratulate Michael Rillon. The Communities Development and Career Coordinator at Palisades High School. I had the honor of sitting beside Mike and his with Michael and his family and the principal at Palisades High School Thursday evening. And there again, I'd like to congratulate Michael Rillon for all the work he's done. He was given an award for education and his passion. Excuse me here while I cough. tickle came on. So he got an award for his unbelievable achievements in education. So I attended that instead of going to the NARI meeting. And it was well worthwhile. I met a lot of people and learned a lot of things about various avenues. And there again, none of that would have happened if I wasn't involved in the industry. So it's just, what would you say about that, about getting involved?
Well, anybody that's in business should be involved in their industry, which provides updates and education and so on. So you have to do that. You have to keep up with your industry. And I can't say I have. I get some magazines that I pay attention to and all, but
it's hard to keep up, actually.
I have no reason to stay on top of things, but I like to see what's going on. Now, I will say I've been disappointed in some magazines that if you're looking for advertisements, they're there. But in something like Architectural Digest and others, I'm not looking for advertisements, but there are so many.
We're inundated with it. You know that.
Oh, it's... So I've given up some magazines.
Matter of fact, I've given up pretty much all printed material because of the advertisements and everything. It's confusing. Yeah. It distorts it all.
Yeah. Well. But I'm always keeping my eyes open for better tools and that sort of thing. One tool I will say that probably I think revolutionized things was the oscillating saw.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yep.
And,
that's the greatest tool they ever made.
Maybe 20 years ago? I don't know. But
I haven't had one for about for only about 10.
Okay.
Actually, now I have three.
Yeah, yeah.
I have two batteries and one power.
Right.
And the only reason I got...
That is fabulous. It in some ways just about did away with a chisel and several other tools.
I'll share this about my oscillating tool. Excuse me, I got me some water now, yes. So I apologize for that. Last week, I had to put a vent hood in. And they had an old Decor liner hood in there.
Yeah.
And what it is, when I say Decor liner hood, it's got this metal pan that's put up inside a cabinet hood. Okay, well, that was encapsulated by ceramic tile. They put tile on the sides. They put tile up the back. So, in other words, I had to cut it out. I had to cut this in a stainless steel. So the homeowner was all apprehensive about it. And why we've been planning this for 2 months, and all of a sudden the husband calls me the night before with all these questions. I said, "Where you been? We've been planning this for 2 months." Well, I've been busy and all anyway. So. And his wife told me, it's just the way he operates. Okay, fine. You know. But anyway, so when he was all kind of concerned about me getting this liner out, he says, "How are you going to do it and not damage the tile?" I says, "That's why you call me, because I know how." And he says, "But how?" I said, "With a grinder, one, and an oscillating saw. That's my approach." He says, "Well, what do you mean?" And I kind of explained it to him. And, I got my metal grinder with a metal cutting blade in it, and I cut where I could. But then the oscillating saw up in the tight corner that you couldn't grind away, oscillating saw with a brand-new bimetal cutting blade made it a breeze. Had that sucker out in less than 15 minutes.
Those darn blades get expensive, don't they?
They are expensive. However, now on that note, you can call Charlotte Community Tool Bank. Now, this is a little blurb for Charlotte Community Tool Bank. They have a tool sale or two every year. They've got a whole pallet, wooden crate over there, full of those blades. And you can get a whole pack for $5.
No kidding.
That whole pack for $5 has got at least a $70 to $100 worth of blades right there. And at the last tool sale, I bought three packs of them, I think.
Yeah.
So I've stocked up on blades, and there's a whole pack of five metal cutting blades in there. There's two packs of wood cutting blades in there. And the point is, the most expensive part about an oscillating saw is the blades. They're expensive. So, but that, once again, is one of the best tools. And scraping, like if you had a tile floor, an old vinyl floor, like an Armstrong Solarian. Oh, don't we remember those, no. Al? Armstrong Solarian, does that ring a bell?
Mm-hmm.
You bet it does. People of today don't know what that stuff is. Now that LVP's come along and changed the whole flooring industry.
Yeah. You know, another tool that I have several of them, but when battery operated, what am I saying?
Sure.
First came out, I didn't have my installers use them because I said, hey, if you got an electric plug nearby, might as well use an electric saw or drill or screwdriver or whatever. So for a long time, we did that. But eventually, the battery operated really came up to steam. And
they sure have.
It's just
battery tools
so
are
handy.
Phenomenal
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like impact drivers.
Yeah, yeah.
I used my first Milwaukee impact driver. I was sold immediately. Yeah. So got to have one of these. Next day I went out and bought one,
yeah.
And it's changed. But the power behind a drill driver, I saw a video about this yesterday, absolutely astonishing. So if you people out there think the tradesmen are listening to me, think you need an impact driver, try your drill. Your drill driver is what they call it. The new drills, battery-operated drills, have more power than you can believe. And I was proving that yesterday via the video, driving 6-inch deck screws.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 10-inch screws through post. Amazing.
No, but rather than just a drill, that's an impact.
No, it's not an impact.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just a drill. That's what I'm saying. The drill is more powerful than you might think. Which I'm going to give it a go next week in certain situations and test it. But anyway, so you don't need two tools. You don't need a drill and an impact driver is what I'm saying. For you DIY people, because you don't need necessarily an impact driver, although I love mine. I don't know what I'd do without a screw gun, you know. And I had a Milwaukee drywall screw gun for years I used to install cabinets and things of that nature.
I would say the impact might still have a place to be when you're tightening something up because you can tighten just a fraction with that.
Yes, I agree.
Where a drill, you might not be able to.
I agree. I'm just saying, but give them a shot instead of paying another $60 to $150 for another tool. You may not need it. That's all I'm saying. But battery technology by far has come, especially these new brushless goods. It's just amazing. Although I talked to a guy the other day, he said he had never owned a brushless one. I says, why? He says, I'm not happy. They're made mostly of plastic. He was very critical. But there again, hey, mine have operated very well. I've had a set of DeWalt 20-volt new tools for 2 years. Excuse me, year and a half. And this coming Christmas, it'll be 2 years. And I've had no issues at all with any of those tools.
Do you still keep some electric drills around?
I carry an electric drill wherever I go. I carry an electric oscillating tool wherever I go. I carry an electric grinder with me wherever I go. Why? Because there's times that you're going to need it.
Yeah, there's the cord electric still has a lot of power, and it's ready whenever you want to use it, even if you haven't charged it.
I agree. And there again, if I'm in a crawl space doing work, carpentry work, or putting a vent in, I'm going to have an electric power saw, sawzall down there. I will not have a battery reciprocating saw in a crawl space if I'm under there. It will be fed with a cord because I can't stand not having the power I need behind a reciprocating saw, which is we generically call them sawzalls. So that's just
I keep a nice corded variable speed electric drill in my motor home because a battery operated I would never be sure if it was going to be ready
charged and ready to go. I truly understand that. Nothing's I tell you, the most frustrating thing in the world is a tool that doesn't work right.
Oh well.
phone. Technology is great when it works, but when it doesn't work, how many events have you ever gone to and the technology didn't work and there was a glitch? And they said, I'm sorry, folks. It happened the other night at that big awards banquet. You know, there at the end, something didn't work right. You know, it never fails, seems to be, anyway. It's all great when it works, but I don't like tools that don't work. I've thrown quite a few across the room before through the years.
And you have to know how to use them. That's you're talking about training and such.
Yes.
One of the first reasons for training is safety.
Yep.
Because you can sure mishandle a tool. I have a younger brother, and years ago, he was working on a project just using a simple chisel. And I just realized he wasn't using that chisel right, and he just didn't realize there was a better way to use it. And so unless you're working with somebody or that can help pass along tips, you're not going to learn it.
It's absolutely imperative that you work with experience if you can find it. Because that experience, the other day I was telling you, I helped my dryer vent guy that bought my company install a dryer vent. And I was up in the attic, and I told him, I says, well, we need to do this. He says, right there. I wouldn't have thought of that. Your experience right there.
Sure.
Your experience in telling me what you just told me is valuable. Because as many times as we've been on jobs together, you never told me that. But I understand completely. He said, that's experience. So that's where you learn.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with people that know their craft, and you'll learn quicker and faster. But be open for criticism. Always. Yeah. Don't let it destroy your little bitty ego, or your big ego, whichever.
Yeah. In Vietnam, I was felt so sorry for these new guys that came over, and we couldn't spend enough time with them to pass along everything we wanted to, so they had to learn a lot on their own. And when you have to learn something by trial and error by yourself, it increases the possibility of an accident or danger or whatever, and you don't learn as fast.
I agree.
So when I could learn by flying with experienced pilots for a couple hundred hours, I learned a heck of a lot. And so when I moved on, even though I didn't think I was ready, I knew a lot, and it didn't take me long to adapt to that. But the new guys, I felt sorry for them. We were unfortunate. We didn't have a good CO. I knew that from the first day.
Poor leadership's horrible.
Oh, we were going out flying with these guys that just got their helicopters in, and the M60s, we have two M60s, and none of them had been fired. Our personal weapons need to be fired weekly or sometime. And so I asked the CO, I said, where's the test fire pit? So you just need a hole in the ground to fire a few rounds out of a M60. His exact words were, battalion won't let me have one. And I chuckled a little bit. I couldn't believe that here's a major telling me that he can't put a hole in the ground. And so we never put a hole in the ground, but these new pilots got very independent and would start testing weapons out over the open forest and that. And you're not supposed to do that, but they try to be careful. So these new guys were very fortunate that in a couple of months they had, I won't say they've caught up to speed, because there were still things that more experienced guys could teach somebody.
Gotcha.
But, things they may never learn because they weren't exposed to that. So anyway, if you can learn something by, now, we've learned things by watching people. I know ever since,
you do.
I was the littlest kid. You know, my dad would every now and then take time. He showed me how to test a condenser or set points on a car and that sort of thing. And he shocked me. That had to be done.
Electrical.
You have to
feel electricity.
Just a new guy has to be shocked by a condenser. Now they don't do that anymore. But down.
No, it's safety. They said, oh, that's cruel. That's terrible. I think it's the way it should be. You got to get shocked once or twice.
Yeah, just
gal sitting where you sat one day. She blessed me out right here on air, told me, Ray, I dare you say that. We go to weeks of training for safety, and you don't have to be shocked ever. I says, okay. I mean, she gave me the runner. I mean, she gave me heck, man. And she's right in one sense.
Right.
But I still think everybody needs to feel 110 volts. How many times you been shocked? You couldn't count them,
okay? Three or four.
Is that all?
And some, I'm surprised it wasn't worse. One time I was standing on top of two water tanks that we'd run outboard motors in. I was hooking up a fan above it. So I was here standing on metal that was wet, and I touched some live wires. And thank goodness I didn't grab them too tight. But another time I did. At a new house, I was putting in a new light, and I turned the switch off. But soon I learned it was still hot, that some do-it-yourself guy put the switch in the neutral line, the ground.
Oh, put the black on the white.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, he put the switch in the white line, and so it would.
Oh, a white traveler.
Yeah.
Got
it. It would shut the light off, but the fixture still had power to it.
Right.
And so that taught me a lot of lesson to
check your line voltage.
Yes.
Check it.
Double check it.
Folks, I don't openly, say that you should get shocked, okay? That's ridiculous. That's not safe. I understand. Use every precaution. Cut the power off. Safety first. I agree. I'm not saying go get shocked purposely, okay? However, I believe everybody needs to be exposed to electricity a little bit and learn it, by what it is and understand it and educate yourself to the possibilities. Be safe. Cut the power off. Please, if you're not an electrician and you don't know electrical, use an electrician. Find someone that does know what they're doing, because it will kill you. Enough said.
Yeah, I'll only clarify. When I was saying you had to be shocked, my dad was teaching me when I was 6 years old how to test a condenser. And that's just a small part of what used to be in a car. And when they were charged, you picked them up and touched the two ends, it would shock you.
Because that's what they are.
That wouldn't do any harm, but it was kind of a joke, the prank that was pulled on a new guy.
Right.
It wasn't your 110 current.
I got you. All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back more Al Harold. Let's talk some, what do you do when you put cabinets up? What's the first thing you do before you install cabinets? What's the first thing you do when you install cabinets? As a matter of fact, I'll let that be a question. If you call in here and give me the correct answer, I'll give you lunch, dinner for two for McCoy's Smokehouse and Salon down on Old Pineville Road. What did I say? Did I say it right? Saloon? I said salon. It's a salon. We just spell saloon. Okay, that works. Yeah, McCoy's Smokehouse and Saloon, Old Pineville Road, dinner for two. What is the first thing, before you install cabinets in any kitchen, what's the first thing you're going to find? We'll be back with more about your house.
Heading up to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey, I didn't know that I'd be missing you so. Come Monday, it'll be alright.
All right, welcome back. Before the break there, I went ahead and took the opportunity to shoot a question out to win lunch and dinner for two or a meal ticket. Let's just say win a meal ticket for McCoy's Smokehouse and Saloon on the Old Pineville Road right there at Woodlawn. And the question was, when you're installing kitchen cabinets, typically the room's empty, right?
Yes.
Right? You got a bunch of boxes and cardboard boxes over on the other side of the room there, and they're full of cabinets that you got to uncrate and install. So what's the first thing you're going to do before you start installing kitchen cabinets? What's the very first thing you got to do to install kitchen cabinets in a empty kitchen you're going to install brand new cabinets in? What's the first thing? 704-227-8986. If you think you know, give us a call, because I'm not going to tell you until you do call. 704-227-8986. And I personally, along with this man beside me, both of us have installed a lot of cabinets in our lives.
Yes, we have. And I'll say the obvious one is you tear the old ones out, but that, we're not counting that.
No, we're not counting that. Now, you got to tear that Owens out. But the number here is 704-227-8986. Lunch, dinner, meal ticket for two at McCoy's Smokehouse and Saloon on Old Pineville Road. And by the way, they're open on Sundays now and normally got specials every Sunday. And every check with them, they've got some great specials down there. They got daily lunch specials as well. And if you've never had pot roast at the, have you ever ate at McCoy's?
No.
McCoy's is a barbecue place. It's pretty much you'd call it a barbecue place, but they got great wings, great food, great. But their pot roast, unreal, off the chain. Make a bulldog break his chain. Best pot roast I've eaten at any restaurant in Charlotte, no question about it. So that's McCoy's Smokehouse and Saloon, Old Pineville Road right there at Woodlawn. If you think you know the answer to my question, which is, you're installing new kitchen cabinets in a new kitchen area. Could be a new house. Could be a remodel kitchen. Doesn't matter. But the floor is ready. Everything's good to go. But before you start installing kitchen cabinets, well, do you install the uppers first or the lowers first? Which do you do first? This is not an answer. This is not the question. The question is, what's the first thing you're going to do before you install any kitchen cabinets? What's the first thing you're going to do? But do you install the uppers or lowers first?
Generally install the lowers, the base cabinets first.
Okay.
Not always, but generally.
Gotcha. Well, there again, see, I would install the uppers first, but I knew there was a variable there. I install the uppers first because I can reach everything, but that's just my technique. I would install the lowers first, which is fine. And you can, because then you've got a base to set the uppers on to hang them. So it's just kind of a thing you want to do. You can do either or, right?
Oh, yes.
No doubt about it.
I say, if you install the uppers first, you got to do a little more measuring and...
You got to do prep work.
Yeah.
Well, I lay out the whole kitchen before I install my first cabinet. That's what I do. I draw a bunch of lines and get my lines. Now, with all the new laser levels, did you ever have a laser level?
I did. Didn't use them a whole lot, but sometimes it would be nice to put a line all the way around the room.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I never had one, yeah. But when I did see one, I was kind of blown away and said, that's pretty neat. Who we got?
Yeah.
Kathy? With Hanson? Kathy. Okay, I thought you said with somebody. Okay. No, that's fine. Let's talk to Kathy. Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
Good morning, Ray. I'm good. I hope you are.
I am great, thank you. Appreciate you calling. What do you think the answer is?
I'm taking a guess. I would guess that you would have to locate the studs.
Well, that's one of them, but that's not the first thing you do. Before you even do that, you want to find something else. But I appreciate you calling in and guessing. But thank
okay,
you.
Okay, have a great day.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, that's
okay.
Not... And you got to find the studs, granted, but studs are typically every 16 inches. Once you find one, you can pretty much find them all. Now, how do you find studs? A lot of people, there's another tool. Do you ever have a stud finder?
Oh, yes.
I never had one.
No.
To this very day, I've never bought a stud finder. Now they got apps and all this stuff you can put on the wall and find your studs. I've never had a problem finding a stud. And I did need a stud finder. Matter of fact, I'd get on jobs and people would ask me, where's your stud finder? I said, right here. I go tapping the wall with my knuckles. And then I said, see that receptacle right there? It's nailed to the side of the stud.
Yep.
Now find out which side. Tap, tap, tap. There it is right there. Then you just measure 16 inches all around. Now, that doesn't work. It could be nailed to a jack stud or something behind the wall that another doorway or whatever, and that could be the case. But normally it shows up pretty quick. There again, experience.
Stud finders are very accurate. And so
they are. You're right. Stud finders are great. I've just never owned one. There's a lot of tools I hadn't owned because I just didn't feel like they were necessary for me, you know. Mm-hmm. But the question again would be, if you're going to install cabinets in an empty room, what's the first thing you need to do? Now, I'm going to let that question go for about, I don't know, another 15 minutes, and I'll give you the answer, but you can win a meal ticket. If you want to guess, call in 704-227-8986, and we'll talk about it. Now, if you're planning a kitchen design, and you're going to buy new factory cabinets, typically they're in 3-inch increments, right?
Generally, yes.
And what do I mean by that? Well, the first cabinet start. What's the narrowest cabinet we can buy?
Generally 9-inch.
See, this is experience talking. 9-inch, and then it goes up to 12, then it goes up to 15. Then it goes up to 18. You get the point? 3-inch increments. So when you plan your kitchen, you're going to plan in 3-inch increments.
Yes.
Typically.
Generally up to 48 inches. Now, there's always exceptions. You can get more.
And some lines have customization things you can do to get certain cabinets. And those are upgrades or upcharges, you might say.
Yes.
But when you're planning kitchens, just remember you're going to plan in 3-inch increments. And I don't care how many cabinets you buy or you get, buy some extra 3-inch fillers.
Yeah, you should need generally a couple of fillers because at the ends you're going to have some space, whether it's a half inch or an inch.
Right, and you're going to need those fillers. So don't – and another thing. Make sure you check and recheck your cabinet order to your plans. Because once your cabinets arrive, it's time to install cabinets. And if you've left something out, well, there's another 6-week waiting period or how many ever weeks it takes. So, you know, you want to plan them very, very correctly. Because once you screw that order up, somebody was telling me the other day that a kitchen dealer, I can't remember who it was now, told me, he says, Ray, it's damn near impossible to get a cabinet order right now. Only because of the people at the cabinet company, because they screw the orders up.
No.
And there's nothing more detrimental to a schedule than that. You get a load of kitchen cabinets and you're missing two or three components. It can screw your whole installation method up.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't want to do that. But remember, 3-inch increments, and normally, and you got to work these spaces out. Dishwashers, for example, you know, you can take up space like an inch or two on dishwashers on each side, but you got to have fillers to do so. You got base fillers, you got wall fillers. Now, when you're planning kitchen wall cabinets, how many sizes are there typically? How many heights?
Oh, you're talking from 12 inches to 48 and more.
Yeah, but 42's typically highest wall cabinet you can buy because of 8-foot ceilings. Yeah. Can't go much higher than 42 inches because most backsplashes are 18 inches, right?
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So you got a 30-inch standard wall cabinet, 30-inch high.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got goes up to 36, and the next increment would be 42. Now you've got all the ones in between, like you said.
Oh, yeah.
You got 12 highs. You got 15 highs. You got 18 highs. But all these things are typically in 3-inch increments.
And the backsplash is required to be 18, primarily next to your range to allow clearance. But if you got some sharp people in the house or whatever, other places you can put them any height you want. So it's not unusual to put a cabinet a couple inches lower if you want to reach them. But
right.
Then you can't put some appliances under them.
Exactly.
So everything has a consequence.
Not only that, but when you're planning your cooking area, you want to be darn sure you plan enough area to accommodate a decent range hood. a range hood, a ventilation. And also, if you're planning your kitchen and you're remodeling it, I would also highly recommend that you plan on venting the kitchen. It's not required by code in residential settings, but venting a kitchen. I went into a seven-year-old house yesterday. She doesn't cook much because the kitchen's not vented. So that's why I was up there. Where can we vent this kitchen to? So we figured it out. But that's something you need to plan on. We're going to talk more kitchen design and the heat of the summer. I'm going to have a little segment coming up on heat, things you can do to look ahead, as I've spoken many times on this show, about attics and mini splits. Mini splits have come on the scene big time over the past decade, and they are a resolve for a lot of your comfort issues. We will talk about it when we get back. Talking to Al Harold, retired kitchen and bath designer, remodeler, sitting with me. We hadn't been together in probably 20 years or better. It's good to see him again. Good you're healthy. We'll be back talking to him and more right after this.
She's a Friday night light lover, a Billy Graham fan like her mother. She wants her daddy and both brothers to walk her down the aisle. She loves oysters raw for dinner, a little Wayne and Leonard Skinner. She keeps her tan lines in the winter southern style.
Grab another cup of coffee and join us for Hour 3 as we continue our discussion with Al Harold, retired and certified kitchen designer and remodeler, talking his journey and the current state of the industry. About Your House is brought to you in part by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting students to tools of the trades and raising awareness of the many career pathways. Also brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed general contractor in North and South Carolina. From the hills to the coast, if you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again. Just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
I want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July coming up. It's Independence Day coming Thursday. And have a safe and be responsible, because it gets a little crazy. Biggest, largest, excuse me, vacation week of the year, 4th of July. And a lot of people head out for vacation and, you know, take this week off and enjoy your family. Well, enjoy your family. Enjoy your life. Be happy. But be responsible. Be safe. And I wish you all the best. So have a great 4th of July week. And, hey. Be safe. All right, Al Harrell's in the house, and I'm going to talk about the heat a little bit because of the heat and discomfort. Your air conditioners work harder in the summer than any other time. Now, if you've got big cooling issues, I won't call them heating issues, comfort issues around the heat, then now is the best time to get an assessment of your HVAC system with someone using thermal imaging. Now, I know you said, I'm not saying it's required, But in older homes built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and all that, if you want to find your weak areas, thermal imaging will do so. The largest differential between outdoor air and indoor air is two times every year. February, coldest month, and also July or August, the hottest 2 months. August typically will be the hottest month. But thermal imaging cameras can really give you the weak areas of your heat transfer in your house, okay? Now, what can you do to really balance and help the quickly and most efficiently is add more attic insulation. But attic insulation isn't the key. Your air exchange is the key. Where are you losing air? Hot air, cold air, okay? Older homes, every penetration in your attic, excuse me, in your ceiling, into your attic, you're losing air. They ABS insulating, give them a call. Have them come over there and assess your attic insulation and consider an air seal program. Air seal meaning they're going to seal all the penetrations in your ceiling of the attic, okay? Why? Because every time, there again, we talked about your disappearing stairway, your folding disappearing stairway. The crack around that, you would not believe what it's costing you, not only in comfort, but in energy. You can buy an attic tent or seal that area in some way, shape, or form. There are other products on the market other than an attic tent, but they work. Now, another thing you may want to consider really is one of the major fixes for comfort is to encapsulate your attic. If you live in a house with a two-story house is 2,000 square feet, roughly. Well, that means your house is a thousand. The footprint of that attic is going to be roughly 1,000 square feet. So if you encapsulated that attic, what am I talking about here? I'm talking about installing spray foam between the rafters, closed cell or open. I would recommend open because it's a less price. But now, if you're roofing your roof, the asphalt shingles you have on your house, which is typically used in this area, are more than 10 years old, you may want to consider getting a new roof before you encapsulate your attic. Why? Because when you re-roof a house, the average decking replacement, the plywood deck, OSB deck, is normally 5 to 10 sheets per house. And I know this because I've talked to roofers, and they tell me the average sheet replacement is around 5 to 10 sheets on every house. Well, that means 5 to 10 sheets times 32 square feet, 4 times 8. That's how much area you're affecting, and that's how much insulation you're going to possibly damage when you replace that decking. So you want to do it in a relatively new roofed house, less than 10 years old. But once you encapsulate that attic, your attic will never exceed 80 degrees. You ever seen that, Al?
No.
It works phenomenally well. And if you're thinking about getting a new AC system because it's not doing the job, new air conditioning, well, you may want to consider encapsulating your attic instead. Because encapsulation of your attic will bring the heat, your load down considerably. And then your AC will work very, very well because you've taken a tremendous load off of it. And here's another factor. If you've got duct work in your attic, every time you turn your AC on, if you'll feel the air coming out of your duct, your register up there, it's going to be hot because that air in that duct work is 120 or 150 degrees, just like the air in your attic. And you're going to get that blast of hot air every time your air conditioner comes on. Well, that's a load right there. You got to cool back down. You don't have that gain when you encapsulate the attic. It never gets above 80 degrees. Make sense? Believe it does. It works fantastic. Now, if you're putting a new roof on the house and you want to do it kind of in a reverse fashion, you can put foam insulation board on top of your roof decking that's made exactly for that purpose. And my brother did that in approximately a 3,600 square foot house. and he put 2-inch roof deck foam roof decking on the house under the shingles when he re-roofed his whole house. His attic got down to 80 degrees. It worked. And his AC used to come on every morning around 7:30, 8 o'clock, and it wouldn't go off till 10 or at 10:30 at night. After he did that, the AC didn't come on till later in the morning, and it would shut off earlier in the evening because we've taken that attic heat load away. Folks, these are methods that you can use that, you know, you don't have to go in and replace your whole unit. I mean, you know, in this day of sale, they'll come in your house and try to upsell you and sell you a new system. Not required in all cases. And then there's another avenue of approach. If you've got bonus rooms above the garage or areas of the house that you just can't seem to get enough cooling in, enough comfort, you may want to consider installing mini splits in certain areas of the house. You know what I'm talking about, Al?
Not
mini
really.
Split systems. They're the new wall-hung systems. It's got these little mini compressors. You see them everywhere now. They've become very popular. And they're a solution to a lot of different comfort issues. Something to think about. Instead of getting a whole new system, you know, you may want to just adding a mini split system to a certain area of the home, and you're taking that load away from your main house system. So it's another avenue of approach for establishing comfort. Let's face it. We hate the hot summer months of Charlotte. They are brutal. They have become more brutal in the past 10 years or so. Humidity here is unbelievable. Now, one other thing I've got to talk about. What's that noise? That's your phone. Okay. One other thing I want to talk about is your condensation drain. I've warned you and asked you many times, where is your condensation drain on your house? The condensation, remember, air conditioning is nothing more than a dehumidifier. That's basically what air conditioning does. You've got an evaporator coil that a refrigerant runs through, and then you've got the air in your house coming in the air return, running across this evaporator coil. What do you get when you've got hot air and cold air mixed? Hot air and cold air every time you get moisture. Every time, moisture. And that moisture drains into a pan under your evaporator coil. Your A coil is what they call it. Okay? Then that moisture must drain out a little drain line, typically. And you should know this. I don't care if you're renting or you're buying or you own or whatever. You need to know these things because if you come up, especially if you're on a slab, if you're on a slab, something happens to your drain and gets clogged up in an older home, you have water on your floor. And then you're going to come home and you feel soggy carpet. Well, if you know these things to check, number one service call in the summertime to air conditioning, clogged condensate drains. Number one service call, clogged condensate drains. So know where it's at, know how to repair it, or clean it, you're going to clean it. Now, all new homes after a certain year, I can't remember what year, by code have to have an auxiliary pan, drain pan. And what that is, in a lot of homes in Charlotte, newer homes, have a drain sticking out of the soffit above a window or noticeable around the house. If you see water come, and you need to know where that drain is, because if you see water coming out of that drain, that means your main evaporator coil drain has clogged and it's overflowing into the auxiliary pan. Now, if there's a drain outside and you see water coming out of it, it's got rust all in it, there's your problem. That's coming off the auxiliary pan and it's got rust in it. Excuse me. And you need to call an HVAC technician out there to see what's wrong, because it's telling you by virtue of that drain line got water coming out of it. You're not supposed to see that water. That's telling you you've got an overflow situation. So I hope this is beneficial to you, because right now you need to know where your condensate drain is, and you need to go outside, look at it, make sure water's coming out of it. And if water isn't coming out of it, you got an issue. I promise you got an issue. So, anything you want to add to any of this?
No, sounds good. You're right. These are things you can see, and And
some of them out of sight, out of mind.
Confirm that it's working. If it's not, it needs to be fixed.
And it'll cost you, because it happened to me personally in my slab home. I came in one day and walked back in my office, and I was walking around my sock feet, and my feet were getting wet. I said, oh, no. I knew exactly what it was. Didn't take me less than 30 seconds. Said, I know what this is. So, and there again, my fault, but it never happened again.
And shortly after that, you'll feel a lack of air conditioning because your coil can freeze up.
Not only freeze up, but also there's in newer systems, when water gets so high, it's got an automatic shutoff with the water level. And the water will shut it off. And then you don't have air conditioning. It's not working. So it makes you call a service technician to come out and see what's wrong. Why did it break? And another thing about, if you haven't changed your air filters, if in some situations they've got pressure switches on the air filters, if your air filter becomes too clogged, it will shut your system down as well. And I've gotten many calls through the years about that very thing. And I owe someone a phone call right now that I forgot this week. I apologize, because he's one of the guys called me one day and said, Ray, I forgot to change my filter, and I had to pay a $120 service call last week for somebody to come out here and tell me my filter was dirty. Folks, these are things you need to know. You need to know them, because you love that comfort of air conditioning right now. And another thing, I got to mention this. You're not fighting temperature in your house. You fight more of humidity in your house. If the temperature in your house is 76 degrees and the humidity in your house is around 50%, you're going to have comfort. I'm talking comfort, good comfort. Right now, my thermostat's set on 73 degrees, and it's cold. Why? Because my humidity's low. And if I can keep my humidity personally at between 35 and 50%, I'm going to have comfort between 73 and 76 degrees. Now, many people are listening to me right now saying, golly, I can't never feel comfortable unless my thermostat's on 70 or 72, somewhere there around, and even lower. What your problem is, it's humidity. Now, how do you get rid of humidity? Stop the air leaks in your house. Minimize air exchange. The hot air is getting in your house. And you need to get that humidity down. Remember, your air conditioning is nothing more than a glorified dehumidifier. You're fighting humidity for comfort. You're not fighting the temperature. So the whole objective here is to reduce your humidity in your house. Therefore, you will increase the comfort levels. Works every time, I promise you. 704-227-8986. I still got the question on the table. What's the first thing you're going to do when you install a kitchen full of cabinets? I'll give you the answer here shortly. 704-227-8986. What's the first thing you're going to do when you install kitchen cabinets in an empty room? We'll be back with more about your house. Beat up cars with guitars and drummers go.
Shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain. WC handy, won't you look down over me? Yeah, I got a first class ticket, but I'm as blue as a boy can be. Then I'm walking in Memphis, walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam, walking in Memphis.
All right, welcome back. I told you I'd tell you the answer. It's, you know, what's the first thing you do installing cabinets in a kitchen? empty, empty room. But you've got a room full of box cabinets over on the other wall there. First thing you're going to do is find the high spot. Because every kitchen, they're not dead level. They should be, of course. Every house should be level. But you've got to find the high spot, if in fact there is one. Now, you do that several ways. You can do it with a laser level. You can do it with a regular 6-foot level. I've done it with a 4-foot level and a straight framing member. So you want to find the high spot, and that's where you want to take your measurements up from. Because otherwise, if you don't do that, you're going to be cutting some bottoms off some base cabinets if you just start randomly and you hit a high spot. Because you want to lay your wall out. All your base cabinets are 34 and a half. Right, Al?
Right.
They're 34 and a half inches tall. Now, but the countertop's 36, so that means they're going to put about an inch and a half, roughly. Of course, what, 3 centimeters is an inch and an eighth for stone? So it's going to be a little
inch
less.
Inch and a quarter, typically.
Yeah. Yeah, inch and a quarter. But 36 inches is what you're typically dealing with to the countertops of your base. And then you've got an 18-inch backsplash. And then that's where your wall cabinets start. Well, if you don't find your high spot, you just pick a random spot, and you're say it's a quarter inch to a half inch low, you're going to be cutting cabinets off. You're going to be cutting the bottoms off cabinets to get it right, to get it right. And if you're going to lay out a kitchen and do it correctly, that's what you should do. That's just, and I've installed a lot of cabinets in my life. You want to find the high spot, okay? So there you go. And sorry we got no takers, but that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. No problem. One of the things I was in, and this is something I want to throw out there, and I think Al would agree with me here. I went and installed a new vent hood this week over in Eastover on Museum Drive. And I went in the kitchen, and there's, I think, 8 recessed cans in the ceiling, which should be enough light. But unfortunately, it wasn't. I couldn't see good in that kitchen.
Hmm.
The most important thing, if you're looking to remodel a kitchen, one of the most important details or facts or elements of your kitchen is lighting. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would say.
Lighting, above all, is something that you need to consider, improve, change, rectify, whatever word you want to put to it. But if you don't have adequate light in your kitchen is not what it should be. End of story. There are kitchens I've gone in through the years that just a lighting package alone would appear to be have a new kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Something you did in every kitchen practically, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I have some strong feelings about that builders undoubtedly always like a 6-inch recessed can. And I would always put in a 5-inch can or even smaller. You can get a 3-inch can with a MRI light or something like that.
Well, not anymore, but okay.
Not anymore, okay. Yeah.
Now it's all LED.
Well, it's LED, okay.
Everything's gone LED.
But what I'm saying is a huge 6-inch can just is not necessary in a residential home.
Nope.
And your 5-inch can will hold a 380 light. The 380 is the diameter and LED or anything. So anyway, I'm just saying there are residential things that you can do better than what builders do.
One thing I want to recommend, though, as I've learned over the past, 5 weeks, all LEDs are not equal. And you need to look and study your LED light before you buy it, purchase them, because some are dimmable, in fact. Some of them have variable colors. Some of them have variable hues in white. 5,000 is sunlight, like sun, bright white. Then you can get other tones. Some are dimmable. Some are not. Now, I would have thought all LEDs are dimmable, but that's not the case. So you want to be sure you can dim them. I just went in and had to replace some drop-in fluorescents that went to LEDs. Well, what they put there in there originally was an LED light that we couldn't dim. I don't know why. Now, I may be talking out of turn here. If I am, somebody please call me and correct me. But these lights were undimmable with an LED dimmer, and it said dim LEDs on the dimmer, special dimmer. Didn't work. But anyway, when we changed them out, worked fine. The new fixtures worked perfectly. So anyway, but lighting in a kitchen and bath, for that matter. I went in the bathroom the other day. I couldn't see when I turned a light on. Well, you know, lighting is absolutely imperative for design for me. If you're going to see the beauty of the bathroom, don't we want to turn the light on that we can see the bathroom?
Yep.
You know, lighting is absolutely important. Probably one of the most important aspects of any design or whatever.
You need to pay attention to your lumens. Every package you pick up of a LED light will have so many lumens, and that gives you the intensity or the output, and it's equatable to watts also. But lumens, you need 900 or so for a typical room to start with. And you just have to pay attention to that. That these small little lights you pick up, anything less than 100 lumens, most of the time they're several hundred.
Right. But, well, and watts is a figure of electricity, a gauge of electricity, and that's the old school. And matter of fact, they quit making most incandescent bulbs. They've gone by the wayside because they're just inefficient. It's nothing more than a heat element in a glass encased bulb. It's all it is. It's heat. And anytime you have heat, you've got energy. So with LED, you don't have a lot of heat. You do have a certain amount of heat coming off the drivers, which are the electronic components behind the LEDs, although they've come down considerably,
yeah, I would think so.
You know, as well. And LED lighting in the past 20 years has just literally changed the whole spectrum of lighting. It's absolutely amazing. That's probably the biggest change I've seen in about anything.
Yeah, maybe in the last 6 years even.
Yeah, I agree.
For many years, I stayed with halogen lights, which gave the best light in a kitchen, as it gave a white light.
Right.
And you could get a lot of wattage out of it, but they've got LED that's comparable now.
Very much comparable. Matter of fact, it exceeds the energy consumption, the heat. Halogens were very, very, very hot. They were hot bulbs. Well, all that's kind of gone away, and believe it or not, you get a house full of halogen recessed cans, you got a big heat load there over a period, you know.
Yes, you do, but
it's incremental, but it's still there.
Unless you're up close to the ceiling, you don't feel it, but it's still putting off some heat in the room.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're planning a kitchen, anything you want to throw out there?
Well, I used to talk a lot for the shows about design and so on, and I'll only mention if you're designing a new kitchen, if you have an existing one and want to redo it, well, then that's another thing to look at. But anybody can design a kitchen, they say, because you have a triangle. And that consists of connecting the refrigerator, the range, and the sink. And I used to say at the shows that any two-year-old kid could drop three blocks in a box, and that'd make a triangle, but it isn't necessarily the best kitchen. So the first thing is to, in designing a kitchen, is maybe lay out the appliances, but I think the one biggest mistake builders make is they don't pay much attention to that. And when we would remodel a kitchen, 90% of the time, we'd be moving the refrigerator because they just about put the refrigerator as a focal point. You know, if you're standing at the doorway and the first thing that sticks out at you is a refrigerator, that could possibly be improved. Our existing house we moved into about 7 years ago had one wall, you see, when you walk in, and they had the refrigerator on the middle of that wall and about 30 inches cabinets on either side. And unless you have a artistic refrigerator, it's not necessarily attractive. And so that's the first thing. We moved the refrigerator and put a nice range there. Not just any range. We did put an AGA range, which is a piece of...
Oh, you're an AGA guy.
Piece of art, yes.
Okay.
And we've had three of them.
You've had three AGAs?
Three, maybe four.
A lot of people don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. AGA is A-G-A. It's a European cooking device and invented about the 1930s by a guy whose wife was going blind, and he wanted to invent a cooking range that she could cook on. So he invented a range. It was a wood or gas-fed range. Had one burner, about 1,500 watts, and that heat would circulate around two or three ovens and two cooking plates on top. And it's always on, and you just pick up a cover plate on the top and put anything on it, like a griddle. Or you have two or three ranges that go from 200 to 350 to 450 and put something in. So we love it. But in that way, his wife could put something in the oven and know it was there and cooking at the temperature. So that's a side point, but AGAs have changed over the years a little bit, but they're still a fabulous unit.
I've been involved with three AGA installations in one move,
yeah.
Meaning I had to get go in there and help
yeah.
take it out because they completely disassemble the range.
Yeah.
You can't, and you've got to have a certified, authorized AGA person install that range, you know.
Yeah.
And, I was involved with venting three of them and somewhat installation of the gas because the gas has to be in a certain place coming into the bottom of it. It has to be right here.
No.
Can't be any other place. Got to be right here.
Right.
And the vent's got to be right here. I mean, it can't be any other place. Got to be right here. So very detailed. And they never go off. You never turn them off. They're always hot. And I'm amazed you're still cooking with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they we don't really notice excessive heat or anything from them, but it's just so handy to have it on, and they do very many things.
It's a different cooking style.
It is a little bit. You can get used to it. We sold a house with one, and the lady got used to it pretty quick. She liked it as it went on, and... we've had all different types that, because you can get them that vent vertically out a duct without any power, or you can get them that vent down underneath. If you can't vent up, you can vent down, and you need a little fan to do that.
Right.
So you can do either way.
I hadn't seen those
but
yet.
But talking about design, so we put the AGA there. We put the refrigerator over in a corner. We put the refrigerator someplace. But now we've got excellent, most efficient kitchen, which we always did. We've always designed a very functional, efficient kitchen. And three simple little things I used to say was when you're standing at a doorway of a kitchen, number one, it should be open. You should feel like, you know, you're seeing a kitchen and it's not blocked by oven cabinet that way, or you don't feel like you have to, that an oven cabinet is coming out at you. And then the second thing is inviting. I've walked in kitchens before, you stand at the doorway, and you question which way you should go, because it's got either multiple islands or cabinets sticking out. And then the third thing is a kitchen can be attractive. So there's a lot to designing kitchens other than just three blocks making up a triangle. And I think my background is a mechanical engineer and a problem solver. I excelled at that, and we solved a lot of problems with a design because some spaces are not too easy to get everything you want in those. You're always looking for to make the best use of the space.
I always try to plan a kitchen, if possible, around two people working together in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, and we all learn this in design, triangle, work around the triangle. I don't agree with that totally, because I would look at a kitchen, like you say, the refrigerator was always typically more than not a problem. Because actually kitchen refrigeration has changed dramatically in even the past 10 years as far as the depth of refrigerators. Refrigerators used to be, 32 inches deep. Well, the cabinets aren't but 24 inches deep. You got older refrigerators stuck out in the kitchen 8 to 10 inches. You know,
sure.
Well, nowadays they're more conforming to the depth of the cabinets. So that has changed somewhat. They've gotten taller. And one caution, too. Whenever you go to replace your refrigerator and you go to the appliance store to buy a new one, measure the hole or space your refrigerator is going into. Please do that. You'll save yourself and the appliance dealer a trip, because refrigerators aren't standard heights. They vary a lot nowadays. So you want to be sure you measure the width, the height. Wouldn't even hurt to measure the depth, just to remind yourself of the depth, to cue you in. But like you said, you know, refrigerators used to typically were a big thorn.
And with the huge doors they have on them and all, you have to make sure you have clearance when you open the doors.
Especially in a corner.
Yeah, definitely.
A corner, you could open the refrigerator door, for example, if you've got the full freezer door, but you couldn't get the trays out.
Yeah.
Because the door wouldn't open enough to allow the trays. These are details you need to consider in a kitchen. You know, that dishwasher opening, for example. Does that dishwasher opening impede other appliances?
No. No. The dishwasher, speaking of that, generally we would consider for a right-hand person to put that on the left side of the sink. And there's a good reason for that. If you're left-handed, you put it on the right hand. And it's not a hard and fast rule if you run out of space and can't do it, but the whole reason for that is...
rinsing and loading.
Yes, it makes it easier to load it with the dish in your left hand, because you're going to wipe it off or brush it off with the brush in your right hand. So if you have it in your left hand, you might as well put it on the left side. And so that's just a general rule. The other thing I'll mention is over the past years, single bowl sinks have gotten
big time popular,
much more popular. We would put in a double sink or a three quarter, whatever they want to call it. But many years ago, we went to a single bowl sink and never regretted it. And so
the bigger sinks are by far better.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially for all you big-time cooks.
Oh.
You get a lot more done in a bigger sink, no question about it. And these new farm sinks have come on the market strong.
Yeah, they're a decorating type thing. But,
right.
The other thing I'll mention is you just about can't have too many drawers. So if a designer only puts drawers around the top of the cabinets, you should add more and have at least a couple of drawer stacks of
deep,
three or four drawers.
Yeah, deep cabinet, deep drawers.
Yeah.
Actually, drawers and pullouts are something that I put in every kitchen SOP, standard operational. Yeah. I'd figure them that way. Yeah. It's easier to take things away than it was add, right? Yeah. Once you get a baseline figure, you know.
I'll just mention one thing, put a plug in for these over the last, I'd say, 15 years. What we call box cabinets have become quite popular. And these are cabinets that are shipped in. They might be made in the United States, but most of the time they're not. And they're designed so that they can be packaged as flat boards and shipped in a box easily. And then the installer or somebody will take them out, glue them together.
Assemble.
assemble them, staple them, screw them, whatever it takes. And actually, they're quite good quality. They normally come in 4 to 6 colors or styles. And
they're KDs. KDs standing for knockdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
Knockdown cabinets.
But they come with good, very reasonable, good hardware, drawerware, which is undermount drawerware. And they can, they're very economical generally, so it's easy to spend a lot more money, but if you want something special or custom. But some of these knockdowns are quite nice.
Yep, I agree. I saw a whole kitchen in the beach my son put together, and they were all plywood, as a matter of fact. There was no MCP in them. And they were, I even asked the question, where in the world these cabinets come from? Yeah. He said, told me here in Charlotte, and they were all KDs, knockdowns.
Yeah.
And you assembled them. And they were dovetail, great cabinets, all wood, beautiful stuff. I agree.
So, yeah, I've, you know, and they can be readily available. So if we had something required on a short term within a couple of weeks, we would generally look at a knockdown. Normal cabinets coming from a factory require 6 weeks or more. And so if you have time to wait and want something special, it's still available. But
there's some dealers here in town, the cabinets to go and that sort of thing, that sell KDs.
Yep. Yep.
I call them KDs, knockdowns. And there's nothing wrong with that product.
No, no.
It's just more labor-intensive. More labor-intensive because you're going to assemble them. But you save money if you want to do it yourself. All right, we're going to take a final break of the show here. Got Al Harold in here talking kitchens, bathrooms. Two old fogies here sitting, should be retired, but neither one of us are. We still play and do what we want to do. So come on back here to About Your House, 704-227-8986. You're listening to Fox Sports Charlotte. Download the free app. In your app store, Fox Sports Charlotte. Stream us live, by far the best way to hear us. We're on Facebook Live on About Your House Radio's page. Check us out every Saturday morning, 8 to 11, right here, Fox Sports Charlotte. We'll be back. Today. Thank you a bunch for coming in today, Al. He came in on short notice because I didn't have anybody lined up for this week. But I will say, prior in a couple weeks, we're going to have a man show. And when I say a man show, you say, what's that? We're going to talk about men. Yep, we're going to have men talking about men. And that show, you know what's amazing about technology is when you need it, it never comes up the way it's supposed to. But we've got a show coming up. We're 2 weeks from this Saturday with Dave Redding. with F3, one of the founders of the F3 men's group. We got Bones, a chiropractor, coming in, and then we've got another gentleman coming in that's going to talk about pickleball. You ever played pickleball?
Yes, I have.
Really? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's a great sport. It's a great sport.
Well, pickleball has come on strong, so yeah. I said, what the heck? We'll have three men in here talking about men. Men, a lot of men out there are lost. They've lost a lot of things, and we're going to talk about all that. And about men's health. So in 2 weeks, I'm looking forward to that because I've never done a show focused primarily on men. We've had a few about women and various breast health. We'll talk about anything on this show as long as it has something to do with humanity and our love and our passion and our purposes. So, you know, little heads up on that.
I could play pickleball, and I did for a while, but I gave it up. I'm still tempted. I run around the track of the Y and watch the people play pickleball below me, and I'm tempted. But real quick story, I started playing pickleball.
Talk to you,
and I used to play tennis. I was a little careful of my knees, so I was careful. Knees aren't meant to twist, and so I twisted mine one time when it shouldn't be. And so here I was going after these balls, and the pickleball doesn't bounce like a tennis ball. So somebody lobbed a ball over, just over the net, which was a good shot, and I thought, well, I can get that. Well, that ball didn't bounce much, and I was just about diving for it. I didn't intend to, but my tennis shoes, which I don't wear very much, I wear a good rubber sole shoe, but not a tennis shoe. That shoe grabbed that floor, it was inside a gym, and stopped, and my head and everything kept going forward, and I hit my face right on that floor.
And, that hurt.
And yes, and for some reason, I didn't expect the tennis shoes to stop that short. If you're playing on a tennis court, shoes tend to slide a little bit.
A little slide to them.
On a wooden floor, these tennis shoes didn't slide, and I went forward. So that was the last time I played pickleball. Some things, when you get older, it's just wise to find other activities. That I tell my wife every time she leaves the house to be careful and think about what you're doing, whether you're stepping out of the car or whatever you're doing, because accidents happen so easily.
Well, speaking of that, a lot of people know Mark down at Renfro Hardware. Mark has worked there for 20-some-odd years, probably pushing 30 years. Well, Mark came into Christopher's the other week, and he was on crutches, and he had looked to be a big brace on his left leg. And I said, oh, my gosh. And like you just said, he was cutting wood or doing something out, utilitarian type one, and he just missed a step. Mm. And he screwed his whole, broke his leg, broke his leg.
No.
Things happen. We take so, and I was talking about this with a gentleman just yesterday, how we take so many things for granted. And it in a split second, you can destroy what you have.
Definitely.
So, yeah, you're exactly right. Stay alert, stay attentive, and think. That's the number one word, though, is think. Think, you know. Say, you don't have a motorcycle anymore.
No, I have given that up. Only because we weren't riding too much. We have a Corvette and we have a motorhome and other toys.
Are you doing much traveling in your motorhome?
Just lately. Last couple of years I haven't, but for various reasons.
Right.
The first year the COVID came on, we just bought a new motorhome. And we traveled over, visited 47 state parks in South Carolina.
Really?
Yeah, and we were given a T-shirt called the Outsider because we were out, you know. So we visited 47 parks, and it was a lot of fun.
Yep.
And we did that in about 6 months.
That's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We decided we weren't going to just stay in during COVID, and we got out and enjoyed that.
Well, I want to throw this little tidbit in about traveling, too. Traveling. If you're going to travel the United States and see parks, you need to get a park pass. You need to go ahead and spend the money to get a national park pass. That would save you a lot of money, because if you enter like Yellowstone, it's $35. Yeah.
Pass used to be $10.
Yeah, still, but they've gone up. The national pass is like, I don't know how much it is. It might be $100 for, it's forever, though. You never have to do it one time. But if you go in, like we went in about six national parks on that trip. Well, six times 30, just $30, sure. That's $180 right there.
Yeah.
And that's on a day. We went into Yellowstone 4 days straight. Well, out of West Yellowstone. Well, that's four times 35.
Yeah.
You know, now that's just a little tidbit of help there, because that'll save you some money. And Mary sure was proud of that pass. She said, here, you're going to need this.
Think of the Yellowstone. Let me put in a recommendation for Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore, I've seen the Eiffel Tower. I've been to Europe several times and all over. The Mount Rushmore is still, I've been there twice, one of the grandest things I've ever looked up and to see.
Really?
It really is. If you haven't,
it's in South Dakota, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
If you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. Pictures don't do it justice.
Pictures don't do anything justice, Al, as I have found out.
Yeah.
Even as beautiful as the Grand Canyon is, there's nothing like walking up to the edge of it, looking it down Sedona. Yellowstone, pictures just...
We went out there in 75 with the kids, with a van and a canoe and a motorcycle on the back, and had a great time. And so we saw Yellowstone and Tetons and so on. But seeing the Grand Canyon was absolutely the greatest. Mount Rushmore. But Grand Canyon's
nice,
too.
Well, I'm glad you shared that, because... Yeah. To me, Yosemite's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Yellowstone's got so much to see. Oh, gosh. It's just.
But we went back to Rushmore in 2005, I think.
Okay.
And I was just as impressed.
That's great. Glad you shared that.
They had improved the visitor center a little bit, but naturally the rock, the stone, and everything is just fabulous.
There's so much to see in this country. So much, and it's so beautiful, and I highly recommend taking it in anywhere you can. Like I said, the coast of Oregon, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay. Been up to the coast of Washington State, doesn't even compare to Oregon.
What am I going to do with all the pictures I've taken?
You and me both, brother. I got 6,000.
Put them in an album.
Who's going to enjoy them? Those pictures, I thought about that. Who's going to see them? The pictures I've taken, goodness gracious alive. It's beautiful country, folks. And speaking of the country, 4th of July is coming up. Let's celebrate July 4th and be responsible. And remember what it's about, our freedom. And we need our freedom, folks. We're losing it every day in this country, unfortunately. So, and one more thing I want to say. It's a political year, and it's started. There was a debate on the other night. Ray Terry is not participating in the political scene this year. So I will not talk politics on this show. Will not. So you can forget that. I'm out. I will not go there. Someone asked me the other night, what'd you think? I don't want to think about it. So there you go. Now, people say, are you going to vote? We'll see. But right now, there's a lot going to happen between now and then. So we'll see how it all pans out together. But I will not play politics. Al, thank you for coming in. I'd say, how do they get in touch with you? But it ain't necessary. You don't want to get in touch with him, because he ain't going to help you. He's retired.
Thank you.
He's retired. And tell your wife I said, hey.
Will do.
I'm glad she's doing well. I'm glad you both are doing well.
Thank you for inviting me in. Enjoyed it.
And it's just been a great day. Next week, we'll talk more home improvement, more about your house. We're going to try to get on YouTube Live and different platforms. Radio might be gone, but we're not. We'll be around. So go make it a great week. Happy 4th of July. Be safe. Be responsible. Help find someone to help. Elderly. Reach out. Find out how they are, what they are, and how you can help them. Find you a child mentor. And most of all, let's put tools in school. Let's change lives. Industry, we need your help. next week. PutToolsInSchools.org. You need facts, they're all there. Let's spread a little love, make it a great week. Be responsible. Happy 4th to everybody. We'll see you back here next week. We love you all.
You really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone. Yeah.